It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service and our lives, we make time for life's quieter sides. You may use these moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us join in an attitude of prayer. Easter of our hearts, speak to us. Tell us once again, when we need the gift of spring, that spring is here. Tell us once more when we need to feel new life, that new life is moving and can move into us if we will but open our hearts. Tell us again timeless stories of Easter about the magical bunny that lays brightly colored eggs of spring and offers them free to all who can find them, as food for the spiritual journey as we begin our own Easters. For it is Easter in our own hearts and lives that we need. Otherwise, all the ancient stories are a bore and a nuisance. We want the good news that life can conquer death here and now, in our lives, in our relationships, in our society, and in our world. Bring us the flowers and the colored eggs that deliver that message, O Easter Spirit. For it is again Easter, and once more we gather not to hear the same stories, but to bring the same needs, and to hope that there will be stories to feed them, or maybe even a gift to take home with us, a gift like a flower of spring. It is Easter again, and we need an Easter. So we will open our minds and hearts to the possibility of the gift of renewed life. Then come to us, our Easter friends, come. We are ready. Amen. I have a friend who teaches the New Testament in Chicago, and she tells her classes early every spring that the way they can tell when Easter is coming is that in the couple weeks approaching Easter, the media will run some new and strange stories about who Jesus really was, or they will suggest a shocking story showing that the Christian story has been deceiving us forever, or just run weird stories about religion in general. So last week, right on time, three different stories appeared. There was the verdict, which we've all been breathlessly awaiting, in the case against Dan Brown, which decided that he did not plagiarize from the other authors who had plagiarized from an Australian New Testament scholar who wasn't mentioned in this. Her idea that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were actually married and had at least two children before she moved to southern France. That was nice. Then there was the National Geographic story about the newly translated Gospel of Judas, which suggests that Jesus and Judas were good buddies, and that Jesus told Judas to turn him over to the authorities so that the Christian story could play out and would all be part of God's plan. I've read it. It's a boring little gospel. It's quite late. Very strong dose of homophobia in it, and absolutely nothing to offer anyone toward any first century understanding of anything or anybody. But it was sexy. Third, and the hits just keep coming in this. The third is an author, a scholar actually, named James Tabor, who in excerpts from his forthcoming book, The Jesus Dynasty, writes in breathless prose again about raiding two first century family tombs that are enclosed under a Jerusalem apartment complex. He's even lowered little cameras down into them to photograph the tombs that show remains in them, quite graphic. And he suggests that they may be the tombs of Jesus and his family and wants the authorities to do DNA testing to prove it, however that would work. I'll let you figure out what the authorities, who apparently must not be caught up in the Easter spirit, are not agreeing to do this. Then here in town, as part of keeping Austin weird, there was a special showing. I guess it's an annual Easter run-up event. Special showing of the 1979 Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian. Played Friday night and last night. The mocking farce about Brian, who happened to be born on the same Christmas, but in the next stable over from Jesus, and who spent his whole life being confused for a Messiah, even though his mother said, he's not a Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. And finally, I was told between the services that this is still in the category of keeping Austin weird, or perhaps weirder. There is a billboard up, some of you apparently have seen it too, that says, way to go, Jesus, rock on, dude. So let's sum up. We have a titillating court case, a scandalous, goofy gospel, a cemetery raid on the tomb of some hapless first century Jerusalem family, a farcical movie about Brian, baby Jesus' neighbor, and a billboard that is pretty much off the charts. That's how we do Easter in 2006. Now, there's something odd here, isn't there? I don't mean those five things. I mean the fact that a New Testament professor can tell her class every year that you can tell when Easter's coming because this stuff is going to happen all over again. It's hard to think of any other holiday we have that we treat this way. And I think there's something here worth thinking about. For instance, I've never seen Veterans Day preceded by programs and cover stories belittling the sacrifice of veterans or making light of the number of them dying in our current wars. It would simply not be permitted, nowhere in the world. Could you imagine Mother's Day being preceded by stories making fun of mothers or motherhood, or making light of the work they do? Now, there are the mommy wars going on between mothers about the best way to be a mother, but there aren't any attacks on the idea of motherhood that I know of or could imagine. If there were, I think there would be riots demanding the heads of the publishers and boycotts of the sponsors. For that matter, can you imagine stories mocking romantic love as a run-up to Valentine's Day? We don't do this. We don't allow this for holidays that we really take seriously, and that's what's so curious here. Now, there may be some anti-U.S. policy protests around the 4th of July, but the protesters would almost certainly say the reason they're doing it is precisely because they do take America seriously and want it to live up to its high ideals. But when you look at the stories behind some of our holidays, our annual holidays, a couple of them stand out as decidedly different. Most of them are things that happen here in the lives we're living in, the world we're living in, and we believe in every one of those. See if you don't agree. And then there are a couple from somewhere else. See if they don't feel foreign. Valentine's Day celebrates romantic love between couples. Mother's Day recognizes the work and sacrifice of mothers all over the country. Father's Day tries to do the same for fathers. Veterans Day expresses appreciation for the sacrifices of our war veterans. Memorial Day recognizes the ultimate sacrifice of the loss of our soldiers' lives in our various wars. The 4th of July celebrates the gaining of independence in 1776 through the bravery and dedication of the soldiers, the families, and the citizens of this country. Thanksgiving. It's some people's favorite holiday, even when we can go to HEB and buy anything we like, whether the harvest is in or not. But it's an old harvest festival, and it's always appropriate to give thanks for our blessings in life, even for the simple blessings of food. We don't mock any of these holidays, and I'm not clear how we could or why anyone would want to. Isn't that curious? Now, Christmas. Christmas has two unrelated stories. They have nothing to do with each other. They're both quite otherworldly, and yet there's one that our behaviors show we believe, no matter how embarrassing that may be, and another that our behaviors as a nation show that we don't seem to care a lot about. The one story, the religious story, says once a baby was born from a woman who had never had sex, whose father was a god up in heaven, and who would be what some people in one religion call the savior of everyone, though no one else says that. That's one story. But the one that we practice every December is a very different story. It says there's this man called Santa Claus. And every Christmas he flies through the sky in a sleigh pulled by eight or nine flying reindeer, eight or nine depending on whether you want Rudolph in front. And there are many battles over whether Rudolph belongs in front or whether Rudolph is an addition, so on. And then that man comes down everyone's chimney and leaves presents for them, even people who don't have chimneys. Not only that, he is omnipresent. He is in every mall. Children can sit on his lap and tell him what they want in every mall. If you look at the decorations, if you look at the money spent, if you look at what we're talking about and the costumes that you see, that's the story we seem to be celebrating at Christmas. See if you don't think it's true. And then Easter. Easter is also two stories, and they're also completely unrelated. The religious story is the story of a man who died and then 3 days later came back to life and then went up into heaven and is regarded by people in that religion but in no other religion as a savior for everyone. Or at least everyone who believes that story. It gets a little muddy there. But the story we like better is the story about a bunny who laid colored eggs and about people dressing up in spring colors and taking flowers home and sometimes wearing wonderful Easter bonnets. The very way we treat the religious stories under Christmas and Easter seems to show that really, no matter what we say, we don't take them very seriously. My goodness, they're important stories. They say they're about terribly important things. We don't seem to care. The stories we care about come from a different imaginary world. Now, we're taught that Easter is a Christian holiday. It is not true. It isn't even close. And the angriest screeds that you'll read on this will come from evangelical Christian websites who have done their homework and are very clear that Easter is an absolutely pagan holiday with no connection to Jesus whatever. And you'll read some very funny things about what bunnies, colored eggs, and hot cross buns have to do with the Son of God. They're clear where they came from, that Easter can be taken back at least to Ishtar, which some say was pronounced Ishtar, ancient Sumerian Babylonian goddess, so we're going back 4,000, 5,000 years or into prehistory, and then through other goddesses and other gods It's a story that's been overlaid forever and ever. That in the original story, Ishtar was a mother goddess, a goddess of spring. The rabbit, as a symbol of fecundity, was her totem animal. And eggs were associated with her too. And some stories say that even coloring the eggs as bright colors of spring go back to that time. This is a spring festival. Some of the services were held at sunrise, just as a lot of Christian Easter services are being held. Many Christians agree, at least these people on the websites, and they're really worth reading, that Easter isn't Christian. And they even say that people obviously don't take the Christian story as seriously as they take the stories of spring, life, bunnies, colored eggs, and flowers. And they say this as though it's a bad thing. It isn't a bad thing. It shows us what we really believe. And we really believe the Easter story. The story about sunrise, spring, bunnies, colored eggs, flowers, and having spring in our hearts. This is a story we would rather think about and do think about as a society more than a story about a man who died and came back to life. So what is the Easter message? Ironically, it's very traditional, extremely ancient. It just isn't religious. It's a story of spring coming back in our world and in our lives. It's a victory of life over death, spring over winter, tender flowers and colored eggs and magical fertility symbols like bunnies. It looks like that's always been the message of Easter. If this has been done for 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years, always with the same symbols, then you have to assume that the kinds of messages that have been associated with this have also always had a lot in common. Messages of spring, of the return of life, symbols of sex and fertility, the gift of life offered free to everyone. These have been the Easter messages since before recorded history. It's one of the oldest stories in our species. And these are stories we believe. I don't care whether they've got bunnies and colored eggs in them or not. Just look at our behaviors. These are stories we love. They're the stories we've always loved. And it looks like in 2006, we still prefer them to the religious stories that have been piled on top of them. Why? It may just be because the Easter stories are just better stories that are easier to relate to and a lot more fun. We look to religions for good news, and we expect them to bend their stories to show good news. We're not generally all that fond of getting heavy messages. At least that's a rumor. Though it is what all religious prophets have always tried to do. But they're never popular until they're long gone. We come to church, especially on high holy days like Easter, to hear good news. The Easter story has been covered by the stories of a dozen gods and goddesses, maybe more, from Ishtar to Inanna to Eöster to Jesus. We have covered the Easter story with all manner of gods and goddesses, but they can't cover it. They can't match it. And they can't hide it for long. Not Ishtar and not Jesus. I think that's remarkable. And as a society, our actions around this holiday shows that we don't take the religious story very seriously, as so many evangelical websites seem to be screaming to. And how we do Easter may be a symptom for the fact that our religions have lost their roots in the lives of a lot of our people. Now, so this is the heavy message, then it goes back to flowers and things. But I think there is a heavy message that's worth dipping into, at least before we go back to flowers. After all, only a bit more than 20% of Americans regularly attend worship services of any kind. Almost 4 out of 5 don't. The stories of religion seem to be about such important things. They say they're about the power of life and death, the power of gods to determine whether or not we get it, that can judge us. You would think that if we believed these things, there would be no stories on earth more important to us. There'd hardly be a waking moment that we wouldn't think about them. Think about the amount of time we'll spend thinking about bird flu. We know that has the power of life and death. We think a lot about that, and we try to do something about it. We don't think about these other things. And I wonder if it's because they're mostly just now background stories, things we say the way ancient Romans used to bow to Jupiter and then go about their business as though he were just a statue after all. You think if a Roman were to snicker as they passed the statues or write popular books saying the gods were actually quite human, or put on plays that made the kind of fun of Jupiter that Monty Python has made of Jesus, then the pretense would have been over. And it would have been fair for one Roman to ask another what the heck they were doing pretending to care about those old gods. And that's a pretense that takes a long time to be over. Though eventually, of course, it happened. Now hardly anybody remembers that old Jupiter was the same god the Greeks used to call Zeus, because they're both pretty much dead. Like Ishtar and 100 others, they've come and gone. While throughout all of it, our favorite stories, like the Easter story, remain as popular as ever. Immortal, eternal, infinite. I think if we were really serious about the stories of the official religions, I don't think the media would routinely play off the holidays with the kind of goofiness that we all come to expect every Easter and every Christmas. Or that movies like The Life of Brian would still be played 20 years after it came out as Austin's run-up to Easter. So I do wonder if the way we treat these two holidays doesn't show that the stories have already lost their hold on the vast majority of people. If so, then we should try to reclaim the stories we love and their symbols. This brings up flowers and the flower communion that we celebrate here each Easter. It was created by a Czechoslovakian Unitarian minister 83 years ago because he had the same kind of problem there. His problem was that the people in his church, many of whom had been formerly Roman Catholic, now had negative associations with the idea of Catholic communion. They didn't want any mention of communion. They didn't want communion anywhere around them. And yet, he could tell, they missed the ability to commune, the ability to feel connected to the powers of nature, the powers of life, the powers of creation. So he created a communion in 1923. He had everyone in the church bring flowers with them when they came, and then the church bought some extra flowers so they wouldn't run short. And during the service, some of the kids arranged the flowers in baskets, just as ours have. And at the end of the service, everyone was offered a flower to take home with them, not the flower they brought, but a gift from someone else, as a form of a communion that is giving you the product of these amazing creative powers of life that create not only flowers, but also us. His wife brought that to this country in 1940, and it caught on, at least in Unitarian churches, very quickly. This is about the flowers, though, not about Norbert Čapek. Norbert Čapek died later in a Nazi concentration camp. But the flower communion survives him the way the Easter stories survive all the stories about the different gods and goddesses that had been piled on top of them. The good news about Easter is that no religion has been able to tame it, claim it, or cover it, not for long. Because our behavior says that we may not need stories of this or that goddess or god, but we do need to hear the story that life is more powerful than death, that it's beautiful, and that all of nature is offering it to us for free. The good news about the Easter story is that it seems indestructible. Cover it up, with stories of Ishtar and Anna, Eostre, or Jesus and God, but the real Easter story can't be kept down because our behavior shows we think it's true and because it's written deep into our own hearts. We need a springtime in our lives today as much as ever. We need to believe that life is exuberant with its gifts of new life for old, beauty, spring, sunrises, flowers, and us, all in one beautiful bouquet together. We need some of those flowers, for they carry with them the message that life will triumph in our world and in our hearts, and that if only we can take the spirit of the Easter stories inside of us where they belong, it can grow so that we might keep Eastering on our own all year long. That long after the flowers have faded, their promise of the free and beautiful gift of life will still be alive, resurrected from the stories into our hearts, where we need to hear once more the good, the ancient, and the irrepressible good news of the Easter story. Happy Easter.